We shall proceed. All right, so it is November 12th, 2024, Tuesday morning. Morning in California. In any case, I see some East Coast people here for whom it's already afternoon. Time is relative. Or even maybe not real, who knows? So we're going to begin with a 20-minute meditation that I will guide. And excuse me. My microphone is very sensitive. It picks up my burps. I was listening to my podcast the other day. It's like, oh, that's great. That's terrific. Okay. High tech. So yeah, let's begin with some sitting. And just settling into your body, settling into your posture. If you can, find a way of sitting upright and still. And when we quiet the body, come into stillness. And it's natural to see that the breath is still moving. So maybe to just feel your body in stillness and in movement. In the beginning of a meditation is typically a transition from activity and busyness into quiet. And so naturally enough, there's a carry-on effect of the busyness. So we don't expect to just come into some deep serenity immediately. So just to let that energy gradually dissipate as you bring the mind to rest on the breath. And as you connect with the body and the breath, you can also acknowledge or sense the feelings that are present for you, the mood or mind state that you've arrived with. It can help to lengthen the breath a little bit, just a couple of longer breaths, longer exhalations, to settle. And as we work with the breath, just finding a way of tuning to the breath, whether it's noticing the sensations at the nostrils or the belly, or feeling more the general movement of the breath through the body. or in contained in the larger experience of the body. And we might find, you might find that this attention to the breath also changes, that you perhaps open, experience it more openly, and then that's just general movement, and then maybe your attention gets more refined and you're feeling the very particular sensations. It's just one version of what might happen. The idea being not to get hung up with an idea of what's right or wrong about mindful breathing. Can be enough to just know that you're breathing in and you're breathing out. Don't have to get that particular about it, really. Just depends on what you're able to do right now, what feels comfortable. And naturally enough, thoughts will arise. Thoughts may capture your attention. And here again, we don't draw sharp lines of right and wrong, but just notice. Notice when you can. That you're captured by thinking. Come back to the breath. Back to the body. Back to the feeling state. It's important here as well to keep an eye on the underlying feelings, because the experience of mind, particularly thoughts, but also body, is directly impacted by feelings. And that impact goes both ways. Thoughts, sensations cause feelings to arise, just as feelings trigger thinking. We may start with a raw feeling, just an unpleasant, pleasant state that then expands into more of an emotion or sets us off in a pattern of thoughts. And this is the ride that we're on. And rather than thinking that meditation will control it or suppress it or give us some escape, mindfulness suggests that we just hang on for the ride. We breathe with the movement, with the feelings, with the energies. We trust in awareness to hold it all. And that trust often unfolds into a settling, so that the peace comes not through suppression, but by allowing, by accepting, by being with, not rejecting. We can say that the background attitude to this practice is the attitude of kindness. And that means kindness toward ourselves. So again, not that we're striving for some state, but that we're judging how well we are meditating. More that we are aware of what's happening in the mind and body, and we hold it with kindness, with understanding, with forgiveness. It is difficult to have a mind and body. The wise response to that challenge is kindness. Hey, I'm not feeling a lot like a Dharma teacher. I'm not sure how a Dharma teacher is supposed to feel, but this, I guess this is my third class since I had that my knee surgery, and I can't even remember the first one. This morning I was like, now I must have taught like just a few days after this. I don't remember what I did. Did I? In any case, and it's sort of awkward. I have to kind of set up the table. My leg has moved to move, but I'll just talk a little bit about this process, because I know most of us will at some point go through, if and I'm sure many of you have already gone through, various health problems that are challenging to the mind, and that's, that's my area of interest, the mind. And so, what's particularly interesting to me is the way extended physical problems, what happens over time. In the beginning, there's a little bit more sort of energy and sort of optimism, like, okay, I'm handling this, I'm being mindful. And then as time goes on and there's persistent pain, there's a gradual kind of wearing down of your persistence and your emotionally. There's a feeling of frustration, and it all, the thing that really it comes back to, because I know that what I'm going through is temporary, and that it will get better, and it will get much, much better. But it's just so interesting how the mind clings on to the idea of permanence, and and the mind will be like, I can't stand this, or this is so terrible, and because there's a sense like it's never going to go away, so the whole time, relationship to time, and just day after day, and kind of like, how long will this be? And then, the ups and downs just of the physical. So just very interesting. And it's only been in the last few days that I've started to be able to meditate in a more serious way, where I can sit and really get settled. And obviously I have tremendous gratitude for that, and I can feel, and really over these weeks, that's one thing that's really apparent to me, is that my years of applying mindfulness, have impact, that despite the difficult mind states and frustrations, that my mind does also very pretty quickly settle into just being with the states, and there's been a lot of calm and peacefulness, and there's a tremendous need for acceptance that, because I like to get things done, and I have managed to get some things done. I have my podcast ready to go, and my audiobook is actually just came out. I should put a link for that in the chat. So I'm being somewhat productive, but I also spend a lot of time just, reading my favorite mystery writer, and I'll get into YouTubes of like analyzing pop songs, and things to just pass the time, and to not beat myself up for that, to think like, oh, I should be more productive, I should be more positive, I should be reading a Dharma book, or I should be, whatever. Yeah, I'm re like, I can't read I have very little energy for reading Dharma, and I'm actually in a class right now as a student, so that's again forcing me to spend a little bit of time. But in these mind states, it's another thing. I just have to accept, just as it's difficult to meditate, that that the mind won't really rest in Dharma for long periods of time. So just sharing all that. I have also been scheduling things for next year, and if you're on my mailing list, I s sent out an email yesterday for the first time in quite a while, because I was kind of waiting for the audiobook to be ready. But I'll be in San Diego in January, and then we have the retreat in late February. So it's good, again, to just have things to look forward to. Anyway, I don't mean, want to spend the whole time, talking about me, but I do, I do feel it's my job, and it's my responsibility, and it's also my commitment, my refuge to whatever is happening in my life, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, that I apply the teachings, and that I ask myself how I can practice with this. And just to, put a little, maybe put a final note on it. All the indications from the physical therapist who's coming by, and nurses and things, are that I'm actually way ahead of the game here, that I'm progressing very rapidly and recovering really quickly. It just turns out that I don't like pain. I don't know if anybody else has that problem. Anyway, so I guess, lately I keep coming back to this, the sutta, the simile of the saw. And it's interesting that it's one that, and this particular paragraph, essentially, in this sutta, that I just find, it's one that I try to recite to myself, and I have a hard time remembering it perfectly, so I keep going back and opening it and reading it, and I think it is applicable to both this moment in history as well as what I've just been talking about. So the simile of the saw is this really remarkable sutta, and I wrote a chapter, really two chapters, in my book Living Kindness about this sutta. And I enjoy going through all the details of it, because it's a sutta that has a sort of lot of drama and people in it, and crazy wild images, and it's just fascinating. Compared, there are many suttas that are just sort of like bland narratives, or just not even narratives, just teachings that are always valuable, of course, but as a as someone who's really loves narrative and loves stories, loves characters and imagery, there are a few suttas that reach the level of this one. But I'm not, so that, all that being said, so if you're interested in looking at it, because you can find it online, it's from the Majjhima Nikaya, and it's number 21. It's called Simile of the Saw. If you just Google Simile of the Saw, I'm sure you'll find on Access to Insight or Sutta Central, one of those, you can find different translations for reading the whole story. But here's the part of the sutta that just that I love. And it's in response to being in a situation where, there's a tendency to get angry, at least, if not worse. And the Buddha is, the teaching of the sutta really is You should never get angry. That anger is a poison. And he says that, so you he says you should train thus. So he's saying you should train your mind to react in this way, to think in this way. Our minds will remain unaffected, and we shall utter no evil words. We shall abide compassionate for their welfare, the enemy, the person we're angry with, with a mind of loving kindness without inner hate. We shall abide pervading them with a mind imbued with loving kindness. And starting with them, we shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. That is how you should train. So it's actually somewhat repetitive, but there's a few things I want to point out about this. First of all, this idea of training. And we see this term in the mindfulness of breathing, so to training our minds. So, this goes very much along with the modern view of meditation as something that actually affects the brain. And we know from work, particularly from Rick Hansen's book, Buddha, The Buddha's Brain, or Buddha's Brain, I guess the isn't in it, Buddha's Brain, I think it's called. That apparently, when we keep doing this practice, in other words, when we train ourselves to come back to the breath, to arouse mindfulness, to cultivate loving kindness, when we train our minds to view things through the lens of Dharma rather than through the lens of self, when we keep doing that over and over, that the brain itself changes, that it's not just a sort of thing that's happening in our thinking, but it's actually the structure of the brain changes. And that's what I, when I said that I can kind of feel how my practice is manifesting in my recovery and working with these physical and mental states that are happening around this recovery, that's because I believe I've trained for so long at this. And not to say that you necessarily have to train forever, but it's a training. So our minds will remain unaffected. I love this opening phrase, that because it just points immediately to like equanimity. This is the word that comes to mind when I hear that my mind will be unaffected, and that is the state of like, it's coming in. The sense impressions, the behavior of others, the bad things are happening, but my mind will remain unaffected. So this is like a great challenge, but it in practical terms, what it means is that if I am mindful in that moment as the stimuli hit me, I don't have to react. This is called guarding the senses. It's like I see you, but I'm not gonna go into you. I pick up the paper and then I see things are happening in the world. I'm putting it down now. I'm not diving in. I'm not letting the anger in infiltrate me. My mind will remain unaffected. And I turn this into the singular, where here in this paragraph, it's in the plural, first person plural, our minds will remain unaffected. My mind will remain unaffected. So when I recite this, I actually recite this to myself as a training, just like we do love with loving kindness. But instead of saying, may all beings be happy, I say, my mind will remain unaffected. and I shall utter no evil words. Now, I've decided that as a meditation, I add a second phrase here, which is, risky adding words to the Buddha, but I think he would accept this. And so I say, my mind will remain unaffected, and I shall utter no evil words, nor harbor unwholesome thoughts. So, nor harbor unwholesome thoughts. Just my mind will remain unaffected. I shall utter no evil words, nor harbor unwholesome thoughts. So this already, sort of sets me up. The stance of not being caught, not being grabbed. I'm not going to fall into this. And so we can think of this in terms of the kinds of right effort. There's the effort to avoid the unwholesome. This is the first right effort, avoiding the unwholesome. And then he says, I shall abide compassionate for their welfare with a mind of loving kindness, without inner hate. So one of the things that's striking about this, and we see this throughout the suttas, is that the Buddha is playing both sides. When he says, I shall abide compassion for their welfare, he doesn't just leave us in the positive. He also says, without inner hate. So there's this acknowledgement that even when I'm cultivating love and compassion, I need to be careful that the anger and the hatred doesn't slip in. So I need to be respectful of both. I'm cultivating. So again, with right effort, there is cultivating, and then there is abandoning. So there are four forms of effort. There is avoiding the unwholesome. There is abandoning the unwholesome. And then there's the cultivating the wholesome, and then there is maintaining the wholesome. So you can see again, there's this balance in there, right? Between the unwholesome and the wholesome. And the Buddha is making sure that we're working on all these levels in this set of phrases. I shall abide compassion for their welfare with a mind of loving kindness without inner hate. So, he points to this, my mind. I'm gonna be aware. What is my mind state right now? So implied in all of this is that we are mindful. We can't do any of this without being mindful, right? If you aren't mindful, you don't know what your mind state is. So, okay, my mind with a mind of loving kindness without inner hate. And then it just now just builds from here. I shall abide pervading them with a mind imbued with loving kindness. He's saying the same thing, but it's richer, fuller. I shall, so first of all, this term abide, which I love, and many people comment on the beauty of this word, this idea that this abiding is living. An abode is the place you live. When you abide, you're living in this space. You're resting in this space. I shall abide pervading them. So there's this fullness to this, right? It's not just, oh, here's some loving kindness. I'm going to give you a little bit. No, I'm pervading. I'm giving. I'm just filling you up, pervading you with a mind imbued with loving kindness. And I have a sense of what the word imbued means, but I looked it up recently, and there is this reference to things being soaked, the saturated. And this actually starts to move us towards concentration states. This language is quite similar to how the Buddha talks about the deep mind concentration states of jhana, to be pervaded, to be imbued. So as I'm doing this and I'm practicing this and I'm reciting these words, I'm really imagining my whole body. Because this is not happening in the other. Yes, I'm saying I'm sending it to them, but it's really happening through my own body. As I'm doing this, I'm absorbing this, and I'm sensing myself being filled. I am imbued. I am pervaded with loving kindness. But the mind is imbued with loving kindness. It's not just like, oh, I'm saying some words. It's like, I'm letting myself be completely absorbed in this state. And then The beautiful thing here, I shall abide pervading them, this person I'm, having this problem with a mind imbued with loving kindness. And starting with them, I shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness. So this is, very much how we practice metta, right? When you do the metta practice of starting with yourself and starting with dear ones, but it always ends up being radiating, as it says in the Metta Sutta, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will. So this is what the Buddha's doing here. If I can say what I sense that the Buddha is doing, is he's taking us from this kind of personal experience and a personal struggle, really, of like, oh, there's this conflict. And he's actually flipping it and turning it into this vast, radiant experience of love. It's almost like a magic trick he does here. Because the last phrase after that, I shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable. And that's the title of Ajahn Pasano's book on loving kindness. I didn't realize that when I first got that book. Where does that phrase come from? Abundant, exalted, immeasurable. We've gone from my mind will remain unaffected and I shall utter no evil words. So I'm trying to like avoid getting into anger and conflict with an individual in the beginning of the sutta. And I've gone to, pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable. And what an incredible teaching and just meditation practice, because he's starting, we talk about the manure of Bodhi, right? He's starting with this darkness, this difficulty, this struggle, and he's turning it into something powerful and transformative that has nothing to do with it. There's no struggle here. We're on the completely other side. Now we're in this vastness of loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable. When I'm working with pain in my body, and I take my attention into that space, just as he says here, my relationship to that physical pain is that I try to have my mind be unaffected, and that there's no hostility towards the experience. And as I focus on that sensation, it can actually transform it into something very powerful, this experience of the whole body, breathing with the body, with the energy of the body. But so I'm just going to go back and read this again as a whole paragraph. And again, putting it into the singular. My mind will remain unaffected, and I shall utter no evil words, nor harbor unwholesome thoughts. I shall abide compassionate for their welfare, with a mind of loving kindness, without inner hate. I shall abide pervading them with a mind imbued with loving kindness. And starting with them, I shall abide pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. So such a just, to me, a perfect teaching that just it gives us so much to work with, and it's such a great vision, just such a great vision and image of how we can live, and It's not some inaccessible thing. And don't think of it as something, oh, I have to live up to, I have to attain this. Just say the words and feel the words and let them be there and have just a moment, just a few, 30 seconds of feeling the sense of pervading the all-encompassing world with the mind imbued with loving kindness. It's not like, oh, I'm going to walk around for the rest of my life in this state of, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, but just touch into it. Allow yourself to be touched by it. Allow yourself to be filled by it. And that alone can be transformative in terms of how we view reality, how we view other people, how we view ourselves, to realize, oh, there is this possibility. I have this capacity to be there, to have my mind be unaffected, to have, be compassionate for their welfare, and to pervade the all-encompassing world with the mind imbued with loving kindness. And to touch that is precious. It's precious. And clearly, it's meant to operate on multiple levels. It's meant to operate on this training level of training our minds to not be caught in these unwholesome states. But it's also vitally meant to be a way of viewing the world, of thinking about the world, that my mind should, I need to keep my mind unaffected, and I need to be compassionate for their welfare, and I need to be compassionate for my own welfare. And I need to, look at the world as much as I can through this lens of love and compassion. And I need to also look at myself as much as I can through this lens of kindness and care. So that inspired me. I hope that's of help to you guys. Thank you for listening. Oh, Tanya, hi.
Hi. Thanks so much, Kevin, and thanks to everyone for being here. This is exactly the simile that I read last week and this week. Keeping that in mind, I've done Tonglen, and that has really helped me get in touch with a lot of compassion. I feel like half or nearly half of our country is really unhappy and really angry. Really, and I'm not talking about the liberal side. I'm talking about people who are so feeling so angry and disenfranchised, whether it's based on fact or fiction, that they, have basically been poisoned and hypnotized. And really thinking about that and thinking what that must feel like has, brought tears to my eyes. And I'm feeling a lot of compassion for those people, because I think that I don't know if those people are ever gonna have what we have, the peace and the Dharma. Just to have refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, is such kind of a privileged place to be, and I feel sad for them. It makes me feel sad, and has really dispelled just about all of my anger. So my up here is feeling very neutral about the whole thing. I noticed that I did have some tears when we meditated today. That's just getting down to that sadness that's there, about different things. So thank you very much. It was very, very good lesson today.
Thanks, Tanya. Appreciate it. Steve.
Well, yeah, thank you, Kevin. I too, I a lot of what Tanya said, I feel the same way. I've been having a really hard time. And that simile is, I I'm going to have to keep reading that. And I know that we go through that during our retreats. I'm still working through. I like the idea of having compassion for the people that are hypnotized. You know, the biggest problem is you were talking about pain. Being a chronic pain patient, it's just been incredible how much my pain has come up on a much deeper level because of the way I feel and the experience I've had. But the thing I'm working on now is my older brother is a MAGA. And just listening to him and the things that he says and does, you know, he's hiding behind scripture and all the stuff that he sends me. And they're just completely hypnotized to what's really going on, very ill-informed. And it's very sad. But at the same time, I'm so grateful to have to come here. My life, and I've got a long way to go with some of that compassionate feeling. But thank you so much for. I was going to ask the question. You know, what would Buddha be doing during this time? You know, and you just explained it. That's exactly what he would be doing, and his teaching. So, yeah, I don't want to go on anymore. But thank you so very much, and I'm
Thanks,
going to
Steve.
concentrate on that. Blessings
Thanks,
to you.
Steve. But just to say, there's a reason why the Buddha starts this by saying, "My mind will remain, our minds will remain unaffected," because our minds are so easily affected and hypnotized, or however people fall under propaganda, because we are very susceptible to greed, hatred, and delusion. And p actors of bad faith actors, demagogues, and the sort, use that tendency of the human mind to be drawn to greed, hatred, and delusion, and those minds are affected, and so it's very clear why that happens, and people, on the one hand, people who have greed know that they can stimulate other people's hatred and make money off it and get power from it. And so, it's not very complicated. It's really the most simple, primal thing that's gone, we see throughout history. So anyway, my lecture. Ori, hello.
Hi, this is
Hi.
Ori. Thanks so much, Kevin, and thanks to everyone else. I just wanted to sort of share back on the things you said, both about, well, current history and the recent events in your own country and also your health issues. The thing that you said about how to sort of, come through, work through that seemed extremely helpful for me today, given a situation that I am in, which is that I quite recently had a really, really terrible relapse. And there I feel, what you said about the pain and so on. I just wanted to be. When I wake up after a relapse like this, I want to know what can I fix to ensure that this never happens again, and how can I find it today? I can't accept the fact that it is a process that I have to go through, and possibly trial and error. I just I have a really hard time not I have a hard time accepting the fact that I don't know exactly what went wrong. But what you said both about, the recent elections and your health issues. Now I can't remember exactly how you put it, but that was really helpful to me. And as I understood it, and sort of applying it to my own situation, I can just, I mean, it's evening now here where I am in Scandinavia. I know what I'm going to do tomorrow, what I'm going to try to do tomorrow, and I have sort of, and I know what I'm going to do tonight, and I'm, meeting someone to help me tomorrow, and I have to accept the fact that I don't know if I will know the answer why I relapsed a year from now. I don't know if I will, I can't now know if I will relapse again in a year. I just I can decide that I will do, the wise thing tonight and try to do that tomorrow as well. And yeah, so I just want to say, I know that the topic is completely different, but the sort of approach you're suggesting seems exactly what I need at the moment. So thanks.
Well, thank you so much, Ori. And I'm sorry you had that relapse. My sense is that, I mean, one of the simplistic things I've heard in AA meetings is, the reason you relapse is because you're an alcoholic. So, and that doesn't mean you don't need to know what to do to avoid it, but there's not that much to figure out. The main thing is to do the work. And, I think you're exactly right. Like, know what you're doing tonight, know what you're doing tomorrow. Just that's why we have one day at a time, and we have to abandon ourselves to this process. It's not enough to like come to a once a week class or meditate a little bit. It's like, there needs to be a commitment, and I hope you have a program to go to meetings, whether it's 12 step or something, that because it's community and support and people who have been through it, who will understand it and support you, that's irreplaceable in this process of recovery. So, keep showing up. And you'll make it. You don't have to worry about next year. You just wreck, when there's craving. I mean, to me, really, recovery means actually avoiding letting craving even show up. And that's what all the work is about. That's what the showing up for our jobs, for our family, for our program, for meetings, is about being. Just always being pointed in the right direction, so that there isn't that opportunity to like, oh, well, maybe I'll go over it. No, like you just can't let it in, right? You have to stay very committed. And that commitment comes because it simply doesn't work. And once you've accepted that, then it's not so hard to commit to it. So I wish you well. Thanks for showing up. So we're running late. I have nothing to do except go to the bathroom, but I can hold it. So let's go. Sorry. Robin, go for it.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much. I've been really struggling with anger this week. And part of what you were talking about, I just want to pull it up here. Oh, did I lose it? Hang on. I'm sorry. I know you have to go to the bathroom.
That's okay.
It's a quote from the Big Book. It just resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. And we can just put the word humans in there for me because I'm not an alcoholic. I'm attracted to them and love them, and I have other issues. But so I've been really struggling at, and what was still coming up even as you were talking was, yeah, that's great in theory. Yeah, but yeah, but it's great in theory, but you don't understand. And the weird thing is that I'm well, I don't need to get too much into myself. It's just that I'm in a sort of a different place than, even though I'm in a similar place to you guys, and you guys are probably closer than the other half of the country, or the other half that's bigger. I kind of more get, I think that I get why it happened, and I feel like I want to do something about it. And in the past, I have tried and failed because of the way things are, the way the reality of the way things are, and one person or even a million people can't necessarily change that. So there's so much frustration that I thought was gone, because I thought, literally, I thought that the biggest problem, I thought, this is so weird, last Monday or Tuesday, this is such a weird feeling, because if the person I want to win wins, I'm concerned about rioting and losing our power. And, you know, that was what I thought the biggest worry was. And then when I saw what actually happened, and even my home state of Illinois, it was close. I get why. And it brought up all this stuff from the past 8 years. And it's so clear why. So this frustration and this wanting to educate people, but how do I educate people without pissing them off and put stuff on Facebook and take it right down? And I really just need to work here first before I'm going to teach or show or educate anybody in anything. I think, I don't know. Right. I'm a mess.
Right. Well, I'm sorry you're feeling that way. It's a really hard time for many people. And, you know, we will survive or not. Cheryl, hello.
I really want to thank you for bringing this topic up, because I think it's important to feel some sense of grief. However, I made the determination that I don't want to live for years feeling contentious with my fellows, you know, my fellow human beings. And, you know, I thought about my mindfulness practices and my practices of compassion. And I've reflected on this heavily. And I love the way you started this class with sharing your response to pain. And ultimately, the words that echoed in my mind was contempt without investigation. And I want, what is going on with my fellow citizens? And I may not fully understand that, but the one word that came to me was, people are hurting. I may not understand where their pain emanates from. And I don't want to be guilty, you alluded to it, of using my practices of compassion and loving kindness to do spiritual bypassing, because I do think at some point we must respond. But in the meantime, I have to be true to my practices and beliefs that keep me balanced. And I want to hold on to the idea of, rather than trying to frantically shove ideas down people's throats, to use the process of attraction rather than promotion. And that's difficult. That is difficult to do, because, you know, the bottom line is, I don't know all the answers. I don't know if the person that I would have voted for would have been a good thing in the long run. I suspect they would have, but I really don't know. I really don't know. So, and that's an uncomfortable feeling, not knowing. I think we all struggle with that. I'm sure that drove me to use substances in my lifetime, you know, the need to know. And I don't need to know. All I need to know is that people are hurting, and I want to walk in loving kindness. I need to create balance, and I don't want to spiritually bypass either when the time comes. So I appreciate the Sangha. I appreciate your sharing, and may balance reign. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Thank you, everyone, for showing up. Please, you know, take care of yourselves, take care of your community, and anybody who's in the Bay Area can see me tonight at the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery at 7:30. I don't know if anybody here is in the Bay Area, but anyway, Steve, you should drive down. That's what you should
do. I'll go north. I got to go to Sea Ranch.
Okay.
I got to go hide.
That sounds good. All right. Blessings, everyone.
Blessings to you, my friend. Take
Thank
care.
you. All right. Bye-bye.